And welcome back to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. And remember, our toll-free call-in number is 888-329-3306 if you want to call in and ask a question or make a comment. And I'm Don Beischel Jr. here along with my good friend, Mr. James Jones.
Hoorah! Welcome!
And my other co-host is here virtually, but he's on the phone, Gary Heasley. Gary, welcome.
Gary Heasley. That's a strange guy, man.
He's a good guy.
I just love being around him, though.
And we're joined in studio by two gentlemen I consider friends, Mr. Calvin Tucker and Mr. Matt Wolf. And as James said, Matt is probably the preeminent attorney in Philadelphia. Anytime I have an election question, I call Matt because I know I'm going to get the straight answer, whether I like it or not.
That's what he said earlier. He said, I tell people that they don't always like it.
So the week after election, I played taps on the radio here for to give my utmost respect to the death of the Republican Party in the city of Philadelphia. And the reason I said that was because we got our hat handed to us by the far left Democratic Party of the Working People's Working Families Party. But I am a firm believer, like Christ, we can rise and come back strong. And that's why I wanted to have Matt and Calvin in here, so we can maybe figure out a course that I'm sure many people won't listen to us, but that's okay. You know, I've always said we can solve all the world's problems in a few minutes here. What we can do to solve and bring the Republican Party back in the city of Philadelphia, because obviously what they've been doing for all these years is not working. We've talked about it many times here on the show, James and I and Gary, Calvin, you know, we have a great perchant of talking the talk, but we don't walk the walk. You know, we don't go in, we don't go into the minority neighborhoods enough. We don't stay there. We don't get our message out there.
Don't have an infrastructure.
We don't have a product. We don't have a message. And our message is strong. I believe that the minority community is ripe for us to go in there. Now, we've made strides. I mean, Calvin and I were talking about this last night when we were talking about coming on the show today. You know, President Trump has opened the doors for the African-American community and Hispanic community. We've seen the percentages jump up. Calvin, you know, you were there in the 2016 and 2020. You know, let's talk about some of those percentages and, you know, let's start right there and then we'll, you know, go, because Matt's been here forever too. So, we got two old salts
forever
here.
Forever and a day.
Ever and a day.
Well, actually, Matt and I, way back in the 70s, were the youngest Republican ward leaders in the city of Philadelphia during that period of time.
But did you all have hair back then?
Oh, we did. We did. You know,
it was clear where mine was going.
But, Don, I just want to revise your remarks a little bit. The Republican Party in the city of Philadelphia is not dead. Oh. As long as we have...
I don't believe it is either.
We have 100... Between 115,000 and 130,000 Republicans across this city that are active, that are willing to fight for the Republican Party. Now, that's the base in which we have to start from. Unfortunately, there are 800,000 or so Democrats. Well, so there is a 7-1, 8-1 registration disadvantage.
Let me ask you this. So you said there's 800,000 Democrats, but I'm going to say 800,000 registered Democrats. How many of those Democrats would be attracted to the Republican Party if we were able to get our message to them?
Well, let me also revise as well. We have about 1,033,000 registrants in this city, right? And we have a population of about 1,500,000. So there's 500,000 votes that we can get, right? And I think that's where our growth is, in that 500,000 But also, as you said, converting some of the 800,000 Democrats, right? Some are conservative, and we can appeal to those. And then some are non-voters, because in this past election, we only had about 31% of the registered voters voting, which is about 322,000 voters. So there are some non-committed voters out there that if we, and I know you started to talk about appealing to typically non-Republican voters, you know, and in that category would be African-Americans, Latino, Hispanic, Asian-Americans. If we made a concerted effort to begin to attract those voters, or even if they're unregistered non-voters, I think we can grow the base of our party. And as you noted, in 2016, the city of Philadelphia is composed of about 44% African Americans, 12% Latino Hispanic, 6% Asian Americans, which in my calculation is greater than 50%.
Yes.
Which means that you have a minority majority city. The Republican Party on a national basis kind of realized that not just in this city, but in most major cities, and they started to open offices in communities to provide an outreach and services and an engagement strategy of who we are as Republicans. So they did it in 16. They did it in 20. We did it in 2022. The RNC as well as the state party. We have been trying to coerce them to start that process again. But rather than open an office and close it right after the election, right, keep that office open. Now, obviously, based on budgets and a whole bit, we have to raise money to keep those offices open. But I think that when we're addressing the challenges in those communities, right, we have to be present. And if we are and we speak to the issues, right, and sometimes we have to speak harshly about issues to drive those folks into our side. Because if you look at the city of Philadelphia, 70 years, right, of Democrat rule, right, no Republican since 1952 when we had a Republican mayor. We haven't had a Republican mayor since that time. And this city is a strong mayor, weak council system, right? So the mayor is the chief executive of the city, and he runs it. We haven't had a Republican in. And we've only had, I think, two major row offices, district attorney and controller. And that was probably 30, 40 years ago, right? So who's been running the city? Not the Republican Party. And the working family, the way 4 years ago they got into office is by railing against the power of the Republican Party in the city of Philadelphia. I don't know where that came from.
But right? What do you think the brand image is of the Republican Party in Philadelphia?
Well, the brand image of the party, and I can't speak for the leadership of the party.
No, we're just talking about image. It's like marketing. I mean, what's the message? What's the product that we're trying to deliver to the communities that we're talking about here around Philadelphia that can gratefully make a significant difference?
Yeah, and Matt can talk about, our image as well as I can. In certain communities, we don't have a good image, right?
What does that mean?
The way the National Democrat Party, the local Democrat Party sell the Republican Party is a negative image. You know, we're racist. We don't care about grandmom, or we're going to push her off a cliff.
Right.
We don't care about providing services in the community. So we have to, and one of the things I used to talk to, our leadership on the state basis and in the legislature is we do a lot of good things. I can give some examples of small businesses resulting from the COVID crisis in 20. Small businesses got about $225 million through the efforts, right, of the state legislature at that time was run by Republicans. And those dollars went into underserved communities, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to get in those communities and sell the fact that we do good work.
Right.
Right.
Well, let me switch this over to Matt a little bit here, Matt. So one of the things that I think, you know, I in business, and I think really when you get down to it, this is a business decision. So if you're going to change things, the first thing you have to do is look in the mirror,
mm-hmm.
and take a look and say, hey, obviously, whatever I've been doing hasn't been working.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're going to take a look, you know, at the 30,000 foot level and say, okay, I'm looking at myself in the mirror. I'm looking at this whole thing. Obviously, it didn't work. A, can you recognize the fact that what you've been doing doesn't work? And then B, can you come up with a solution that's going to change? And so, Matt, you've been here. You know, you've been in Republican politics since. I can't say when exactly, but it's been a while. What do you see? A, what has been wrong, and what would you suggest that the party in general do to try to, as Calvin said, you know, let's rehabilitate our product. What sure. can we offer?
Well, let's put it this way: there's no solution in quotes. This is a process. It's a process that took us to where we are. It's going to be a process to move us forward.
Agree.
One area, and I think one of the most important things, is that we need to, you know, part of our responsibility as a minority party is to present alternative ideas and alternative candidates. Unfortunately, in this last cycle, there are 10 council districts. We only contested one of them, incumbent Brian O'Neill. 4 years ago, I don't remember how many we had, but we had at least three, maybe four, that we contested out of 10. And even that's not good enough. The candidates are the public face of the party. You know, that is, you know, people don't know who their ward leader is, people don't know who their committeeman is, but they, you know, sure know who's running for office. We need to do a better job there. And I'm a grassroots person, so I have some feelings on this. But the, you know, Pennsylvania probably has more uncontested races all across Pennsylvania, not just in Philadelphia, than most places because of our requirements to get a certain number of signatures. I like to say, and I don't think anybody that's done this will disagree with me, that the most miserable thing that the small-time politician does in the course of a year is circulate nominating
petitions. Yes, I agree.
You know, that you have to get them in your party. You have a 3-week window to do it in. I mean, we already have our meeting scheduled for the 23rd of January. So if anybody's out there, you know, contact your local Republican candidates. They need your help starting the 23rd of January. They've got 3 weeks to get the petition signed. Wherever we can get signatures, we need to put up candidates, preferably good candidates, but at least, you know, giving the voters a choice on Election Day. And it's not easy. There are flat-out places that we're not going to be able to get enough signatures to get on the ballot. And just so you understand, to run for state representative in Pennsylvania, you need 300 valid signatures in the party. You know, it's always been hard to do that. And as a Republican in Philadelphia, depending on where you are, it can be impossible, but it's hard. But it's hard for the Democrats, too. You know, every year we have a circus in court where we challenge nominating petitions because they're not up to snuff. And, you know, you scratch your head and say, I would think that a 6-year-old could get 300 signatures for a Democrat to run for a state representative. Well, they get bounced off every year because they don't do it right.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do the best job we can on that, and we need to recruit people, you know, to do that. And another thing, like, you know, it has gotten progressively harder, not just because of fewer people, but you know, back in the day, when your phone rang, you answered it, because there were not cell phones, there was not voicemail, and your phone rang, you answered it, and if you called somebody and they didn't answer, you didn't talk to them. Once we got voicemail and answering machines, people stopped kind of answering their phones. Well, you know, now, you know, more and more people are less likely to answer their doors.
Right.
You know, we spend time making arrangements, you know, making appointments with people to come get their signatures, which is a much slower process than just walking down the street and, you know, getting everybody's signature. You know, if you set up at a shopping center, yeah, you'll get signatures, but, you know, the quality is going to be way off because they're not going to be people who are registered in the party, in the district, or even registered at all. So this is a big deal, but we need to do much better at this. And we need to really, you know, recruit people to do this, even in races that we don't have a chance of winning. I mean, you know, some people just have to step up for their city, step up to build a stronger Republican Party, and present an alternative to the incumbent who's probably doing a lousy job. Well, you know, I'm in both parties.
Right.
You know, when somebody gets elected, they come in with a set of ideals, and over time they morph into incumbents, and they do what's necessary to get reelected, and that's unfortunate, but that's what we deal with. So, you know, we're in Philadelphia, where we're generally fielding challenges, our candidate is almost always better than the incumbent. In addition to that, we need to become more policy-focused. Again, we need to present alternative ideas, and there are plenty of alternative ideas in the city of Philadelphia. I don't want to politicize any particular recent murder, but, you know, how many times have we read in the paper that somebody that committed a murder is somebody that Larry Krasner, in the exercise of his prosecutorial discretion, made a bad decision on a few months before.
Right.
And that's why they were out. You know, we have the worst district attorney in America. We need to shine light on that. You know, on the plus side with the, you know, one of the issues facing Philadelphia is the issue of safe injection sites. There are, well, I shouldn't use bad words to talk about them, but there are people that legitimately think that it helped. I do not, and I think that the majority of the people in Philadelphia agree with me. They passed a bill in council that said that you can't have safe injection sites in 9 of the 10 council districts. My council district is the one that you're allowed to have it. That is ridiculous on 15 different levels, that they would have one set of rules for one side of the street and another set of rules for another side of the street. And, you know, we're still a sanctuary city. That is not good for America. It's not good for our city. They're dumbing down our magnet schools. Our magnet schools are schools you have to qualify to get into, and what they should be using as a criteria is merit. They're not doing that anymore. They've dumbed them down. This is not good for our educational structure. You know, our schools, you know, I like to tell people, and I mean it, we have the best public schools in all of Pennsylvania right here in Philadelphia. The problem is we also have the worst public schools in all of Pennsylvania right here in Philadelphia, and you don't always get a chance to choose. I don't like to praise Democrats, but Tony Williams, who's my state senator, is one of the few Democrats that understands just how badly the children in our district, our constituents, get hurt by our ineffective public schools and how much they would benefit by expanding school choice. And this isn't even getting into our taxes that are too high and chase jobs, taxpayers, and opportunity out of the city. Our tax structure, which taxes the wrong things and also chases opportunity out of the city. Our regulatory climate that is anti-business. We need to start talking more about these issues, and I think it could be effective in attracting new registrations, attracting votes to our candidates, attracting people to get involved in the local Republican Party.
So, Matt, obviously there are a plethora of items that separate us from the Democrats and what we stand for, what they stand for. So, and I'm going to bring Gary in on this because we've talked about this plenty of times, that one of the things we see is a weakness, not just of Philadelphia in general, but as the GOP in a whole, is that we don't have a, or not, I mean, I shouldn't say we don't have, we're not presenting a product that, a concise product of for people to buy. If I'm looking at this from a specific standpoint. And Gareth, if you want to jump in on here, because I know this, you know, this is one thing we've harped on constantly on this.
Yeah, I think everything Matt said is right, that there are these life-changing issues that are putting incredible stress and pressure on the people living in these cities, and that pressure is building and building and building. So if they had a pressure release, a place they could turn, they would. But I don't think they trust the Republican Party, and I'm talking about independents, people who've left the party because it doesn't fight enough, right? It won't stand up for them. Or those, what I call the disillusioned Democrat, right? Those people who have realized the party they've been supporting really isn't working on their behalf. In fact, it's making their lives worse. So we got this group of people, this big and growing cohort. And when they turn and say, okay, I agree with you, all these are problems, right? Well, I'm not going to the other guys because they won't do anything, and you know they don't communicate well, and but they don't even campaign on these issues. That's where we come back to this: a product without features, candidates that stand for nothing, and say, "Listen, I'm a really nice person. Please vote for me." What are the key issues that you think could be messaged around, but that are also issues that the Republican Party will actually stand and fight for? Because messaging and not delivering is a big disaster that we've gone through for years.
Well, you know, right? You know, so, Gary, exactly what you're saying, though, and I know Calvin's chomping at the bit here, but see, to me, Matt just listed like, I don't know, 10, 15 things, which I think are all important, but we need to focus on the issues that, what I call the kitchen table, the issues that really hit home to people. And I think in Philadelphia, and I'm just going to speak in general in Philadelphia, it's public safety, crime, whatever word you want to use, and education. I think mm-hmm. those are the two big issues that really that we could win elections on alone. Okay, and if we packaged our product and focused on those issues, and we would consistently be in minority neighborhoods, and we had an office there 24/7, 365, and we could slowly build up, as Matt said, you know, this is a process. We didn't get here overnight. We're not going to solve this overnight. But we need to have a presence in North Philly, in West Philly, in South Philly, in, you know, not just the Northeast where, you know, I mean, you know, if you want to find a Republican, go to the Northeast because that's where they're all at. You know, that's what, you know, everybody says that, you know. But we've seen now, you know, that even the Democrats are starting to come after, like they came after Bernie O'Neill. You know, they're going to come after him. He's the last one, right? I think he's the only one left. Matt is Bernie?
Brian O'Neill is only Republican on city council presently.
Yeah, and so again, I think if we would just laser focus on a couple key issues, and then open up offices in neighborhoods where maybe there isn't any Republicans. Because well, you have to get the signatures.
Wait, before you do that, I agree with Matt. You know, the list of issues are enormous
yes.
that we could
mm-hmm.
deal with. But it's like a salesman, right? You're selling a product. But before you sell that product, you have to build a relationship,
yes. yep.
right? And that's where I think the rubber has to meet the road.
Mm-hmm.
We have to begin to build relationships in communities so we can build trust.
Yes,
right?
I agree.
And we can. And the one thing that I tell candidates on the state basis, right, If you can't reduce school choice, budget issues, right? If you can't reduce that to the reason people vote again on, you know, the fundamentals, they vote on emotional issues. So you have to break down policy prescriptions so that people can get emotional about them, because that's mm-hmm. that's what you're dealing with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not the logical element of voting, but the emotional.
And that's what the Democrats are good at.
Yes.
They tap into the
absolutely. You got to drive people out. They got to have a reason to vote for you. I mean, the working family said the Republican Party is not the alternative. They are the problem. Even though my point is 70 years we haven't even been in the game,
mm-hmm.
right? But how are we the problem? They set up a straw dummy and they use that. Right, so that's because we have no relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right?
With
mm-hmm.
you see what I mean?
No, I agree.
So we
agree.
Have to have a relationship to build trust to even get to a discussion of all of those issues.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, one of the things that I see that has happened right here in Philadelphia. I mean, I haven't been around as long as you and Matt, but I can say for the last 23, 24 years since I have been here, I know that many of the black people here vote out of fear. I mean, they're scared to change their vote. They're scared that if they don't vote a certain way, that then they're going to be ostracized. They want to have access to certain benefits. They never get anything done when they vote the same way that they've been doing, but they're going to vote that way anyway because the Democrats got them conditioned. You vote a certain way or otherwise, you know, you're going to reap the benefits, the harm, I should say, by not voting to support this particular candidate. And only these are constituents who vote out of this kind of fear. The people who are well-informed, they're not voting out of fear. They look at a candidate, like what we talked about earlier. You mentioned some numbers, Cal, about you said there are 115,000 registered Republicans, 800,000 registered Democrats. You know, many of these people know what they're doing when they look at a candidate and they make a voting decision. But we have to be able to go into those communities and to actually talk to people. Many of the Muslims have said to me time and time again, James, why don't the Republicans set up something in our neighborhood, a small office that we can go to and learn what it means to be a conservative, what it means to be a Republican? Because it's like what you said, Calvin. When election season rolls around, black folks have been told, oh, no, 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 you don't want to have that Trump MAGA guy coming in your neighborhood because he's going to turn it around. Trump is a racist. This person here is a racist. And that's all you're going to get, a sellout, Uncle Tom, whatever. You're going to get that if you vote for this person. How do you change that dynamics when you have allegedly informed, intelligent people?
Well, not only that, James, and you and I have talked about this before, and this goes back to what I was talking about when we talk the talk but we don't walk the walk, is that if you want to build a relationship like Calvin is saying, then and I'm talking about party in general, that when you have a good minority candidate, you have to let them be the candidate. And the reason I'm saying that is that we have a fantastic woman here in Philadelphia, Paula Patrick, who had twice now has tried to run for statewide race, who probably would have done a lot better than the people that the party picked to run, okay? And she got retained again in the city of Philadelphia. She's got a strong following in the city of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. She's an African-American woman who is a strong conservative. And yet the party who says they want to be the big tent party, they exclude her. And I've seen this with other minority candidates as
no,
well.
No, let me just address that issue.
Yeah.
During that time, I guess I was the first run for Supreme Court. She didn't get the endorsement.
Right.
And, you know, that's a process, right? That's a political process to get that. And so whether you get it or not, if you make a decision to run without it, right, now you have to appeal to the voters, mm-hmm. right? And voters in counties that may have allegiance to their leadership mm-hmm. or otherwise, but you got to go across this Commonwealth in all 67 counties. I mean, she is a sitting judge, mm-hmm. right, as a result of this process, right? But again, politically, there's competition, right? Right. You know, you compete for the rights to get endorsements, if endorsements are going to be given, right? If not,
well, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, yeah, right? That's a whole different conversation, right? You know, it could be an open primary and everybody run willy nilly, and the best person will win. And in her case, unfortunately, that was not the case. She did not win. But that doesn't preclude her from, you know, going through that process again, and hopefully she will. But she achieved success because she is a sitting judge,
right?
Oh, yeah. But we need more. Again, that's one of the things I used to rail here in the city, and now on the state basis, right? That in a city where you have 44% African Americans, and I think I cited these statistics before, 12% Latino, Hispanic, and 6% Asian Americans, right? If you're trying to build a relationship, we had one in the African American community, one city council person, a district city council person, Republican, who became at large council person. It was 40 some years ago, right? But your city is majority minority city.
The demographics.
The demographics, yeah. Right? There should be another qualified African American somewhere Republican elected official, right?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we haven't gotten there. And hopefully, over the next couple of years, we can get there.
It almost
right?
sounds like Calvin is announcing an early run for mayor 3 years from now.
And you know what? That may be the case.
I get that, Matt. I got it.
But I think to right. the greater point is that as a party,
right.
that we have to really be energetic in energizing our either the African American community or the Hispanic community or the Asian community. And we have to cultivate and recruit candidates that fit more in the demographic of where we're trying to win these elections of the city.
Right.
And that's where James and I have talked about this. As a party, we feel mm-hmm. that we fall woefully short as a party in general. In other words, we say it, and you and Calvin, you and I have talked about this, okay?
Right.
That we believe that if we want to be successful in the city of Philadelphia, we need to have Republican headquarters, not just in one place, but in 4, 5, 6 places in the city somewhere. And again, I understand the funding part of it, but you know, if you want to have change, then somewhere along the line, we have to step up as the party, and the state party has to say, hey, we can't win a statewide election without getting X amount of votes out of the city of Philadelphia, and the state party has to come up and say, hey, we're gonna throw $100,000 into the city of Philadelphia for offices or whatever the case may be. Here's a 5-year plan. We're gonna make a 5-year commitment, and we're gonna get that registration up. We're gonna start putting candidates into these unopposed races.
Right.
Well, here's something that I know. Whenever you have like the Jewish people, whenever they go to the polls, or the Latinos go to the polls, the Arabs, the Indians, all these Asians, when they go to the poll, they know automatically they're voting for concessions. There's something in mind that they want out of it. We don't have a good strategy that says, when I vote a certain way, this is what I'm getting back in return. Once we come to that conclusion, I think we can be far much more engaging, and I think we'll have many more people agreeing with us that what we're doing is something that is for everybody's concern, not just any one particular individual who's trying to scare the heck out of you.
Well, what I can't see, James, you know, and I want to say exactly, you know, I'm just going to say it out loud. You know, I find it almost impossible that as the leadership in the Republican Party, that they can't find a qualified African-American candidate, Asian candidate,
yes,
or Hispanic candidate to run in these offices. It's always the same. We're sending the same people over and over and over again. You know, look, I mean, here's the bottom line. I mean, you want the person in government to be representative of you. And we can talk about, you know, all we want, but the superficial part of it is that, and James, you've said this many times, so I'm not speaking out of turn here, that from a demographic standpoint, if 44% of the city is African American, then 44% of our Republican candidates should be African American.
Absolutely.
I hate to interrupt you, but I'm going to go back to what Matt said, and Matt made a great point. It is a grassroots process, right? Especially, I mean, if they come to me, meaning if the party says, hey, Cal, we want you to run for X, right? Okay, and I'm saying, all right, what do I have to do? My first challenge is I got to get on the ballot.
Right.
Right? How many Republicans do we have in my district?
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How many signatures do I need in my district? Do I have to put together the team to go out and get those signatures? Or can we have, you know, meetings, et cetera, to get those signatures, right? So that's a challenge, right? And if they say, well, it's very difficult in the third congressional district to get 750 legitimate signatures, but you also want to get double that because somebody may challenge or whatever, right? Okay, so if I look at all the wards that's in that district and I say, and I talked about 130,000 Republicans, 115,000 Republicans, but if you scrub that list, and the same thing with the 800,000 Democrats, if you scrub that list, right, there's not going to be that number of Republicans.
But that goes back to what Matt was talking about. So, Matt, obviously there's going to be districts in this city where there probably isn't enough Republicans registered in that ward or district to get the number of signatures.
That is correct. But let me also point out
that
this is not just a Philadelphia problem.
No.
There are plenty of places outside of Philadelphia where the Democrats are not able to field a candidate.
Right.
For the exact same reason.
But again, I guess what I'm trying to get at is that if we're going to attack this problem, per se, and we want to put up a legitimate candidate to run, now again, we're not talking about winning. We're just talking about presenting a different picture. Then, I mean, for me, as a businessman, I'm going to say, I'm not going to go where I have plenty of business. I'm going to try to go where I don't have a lot of business, and I'm going to try to cultivate that business.
Right.
So I want to open up an office in a area where I don't have a lot of registered Republicans, and I want to try to bring my message to that area, and I want to try to cultivate that, and then eventually – in a process, we can get enough signatures where somebody can run. And if they get beat 95-5, who cares?
Right.
But you've put up the challenge.
Let me just say, of course, there's a chicken and egg problem.
Here. Right.
But I'm not so sure that the best or cost-effective way to approach this is by opening up offices. What I do think, though, is that rebuilding the ward and committee structure is a critical component here. There's a reason that structure is in place, because it works. It works because it puts activists, you know, in this case Republican activists, in a small geographical area, a division, where they can get to know their constituents, where they can develop relationships with them and communicate with them. Democrats have problems filling all their positions now, too, although our problems are much different and broader. But we need to if I had $10,000, I'd be more likely to sink it into direct mail, email, phone calls, texting, to try and recruit Republicans who are existing to want to serve on election boards, which are critical to have people in place, and to serve as committeemen.
But don't again.
Well,
again,
no, I want to go back. I
want to jump on that, and then you go right ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
But don't you also think it's important, Matt, to have a presence in the community?
Visibility is valuable.
Yes.
Just you know, just a matter of how much money you have.
Right.
Okay. You give me an unlimited budget, I can find an unlimited amount of things to spend money on.
I got you.
Well, and see, and that's the point I'm making, right? When the National Party made a concerted effort, right? And it's, you know, our presidential candidate at the time, you know, made a statement in Detroit, you know, what do you have to lose, right? That, look, I need to be visible in your community. Mm-hmm. I need to show you, right? I'm not going to just, my words can't just be what guides you. I'm going to show you action, right? So if you're trying to attract a new market, right, you can either do it organically, right, which is okay, through the ward leader structure and the committee structure, right, or you can do it through what they the mergers acquisition,
right,
meaning you can open an office, you attract more folks because you have an office. There's a curiosity effect. That ward leader, right, is in his or her home somewhere, and your committee people are there, but the community that don't know they exist, and I would be willing to bet you, even in my ward, in the 22nd ward.
My question is this: we've known this problem existed for quite some time, right? And I think you know,
what
as
problem?
Matt said earlier,
problem?
The problem with the fear factor, the fear problem with getting. A Democrats to convert over to vote for Republican candidates in Philadelphia. And that's why we lose so often. My question is that have we ever really made a concerted SWOT analysis to find out what are our strengths inside of Philadelphia? What are our weaknesses in Philadelphia? What are some of the opportunities that the GOP can bring to Philadelphia and to make it work? And the last part about it is that what are some of the threats that once this thing rolled out, looking at it from a business standpoint, how are we going to do that?
Well, to simplify what you're saying, James, why is our product better than the current product that's being offered by the
exactly.
Democrats?
Exactly, yes. It's got to be looked upon as a business decision. And yeah, you're right, Calvin. You got to put money into it. And you're right. You got to have a locality for the ward leaders to go to and say, yeah, I'm going to go over here to the office, not Northeast Philly, but I need to go over here to the local office to get forms, papers, and it's staffed, you know, at least a reasonable amount of time, you know, 8 hours a day, that somebody can answer the phone, somebody right. can be able to pass right, out, right. distribute material, somebody can say, oh, yeah, so you live in West Philly, South Side, South Philly? Come on over here and let me talk to you about some of the issues.
But if you look at what the RNC did, they did a SWOT analysis, right? Strength, weaknesses, opportunities, threats.
When was that?
In 2012. Right? Or 2013, right? Again, I'm just saying.
Okay.
That's why they came to the conclusion that how do we increase minority participation and engagement in the party, right? How do we appeal, right? And so what they decided, right, and I guess it was they budgeted, so by 2016 and 2020, that's when they put the various locations, 15 around the nation, right? 15 offices around the nation, because they said you can't attract folks if you don't build relationships. And these offices are relationship offices.
Think of the offices as your corner store.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so if they want to go out and get milk and bread, they're not going to go to the Giant.
Right.
They're going to go to the corner store.
Right.
That's right.
And
right.
so if you have and look, one office can serve, you know, two or three wards. I don't know what the size are, but, you know, just in general talking. But the real point is that you now have created a presence in that neighborhood. And like James said, if they want to come there and they want to say, hey, I need help to register to vote. I need help with how do I get LIHEAP, for example? You know, in other words, you want to be
constituency offices, right?
Yeah, yeah. You want to be an asset to the community,
okay? Right.
Not just showing up every 4 years or every 2 years and asking for their vote. On the next show that comes on after us, Randall talks about it all the time that And he calls out the Democrats constantly that they only show up in these neighborhoods for their vote, and then they disappear and nothing gets done. Right. You know, and we need to do a better job because, as Matt said, you know, we haven't had a Republican mayor since 1952. City council's been in the Democratic control since 1960. Right. And yet nobody changes anything. We got the worst DA in the frigging country, probably in the world. You know, I mean, you know, I'll give them credit. We got the worst DA in the world. Okay, I mean, but they reelected the guy with 70-something% of the vote. I mean, I just don't. I really can't get it.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a lot of behind the scenes for those kind of philosophies.
So,
yeah,
so
right.
Matt, you brought up about the wards and the count and the council members and stuff like that. I'm not saying we change that structure, but we give that structure a place to go, and where they can be, that where their constituents, where they could say, hey, you want to meet with us, we can meet at the office at, I don't know, 53rd Market or something, whatever.
And that's fine. I just think that, you know, again, we have a chicken and egg issue. I think that our first priority is to recruit people. I believe that the Republican Party should be investing in people and technology rather than bricks and mortar. Mm-hmm. And I think that our first priority is to recruit people to serve on election boards and to serve as committee people. I think that we need one of the things that we have failed at, and the Democrats don't do it well either, is training the people so that they know what their responsibilities are, from election boards to committee people to ward leaders. How many times have Calvin and I seen a new ward leader come in and he or she is very interested in doing the job, and they hand them the keys and say, gee, I hope you know how to drive.
Well, that's true. They do that with candidates, too.
I mean, sadly, I don't want to name names, but one thing I'll say, we have a very good group of young Republicans in the city. Mm-hmm. And there was a young Republican living in a ward other than mine, and I said to him, what are you doing politically? And he wasn't doing anything. He said, well, you could be the minority inspector in your division. Maybe you could be the committeeman there. I looked it up. They already had a minority inspector in his division. So I sent an email to the ward leader, who was very new, and said, here's a guy. He's in your ward. He's a Republican. He's active with a young Republican. He wants to get more involved. Why don't you see if your minority inspector will appoint him the clerk in the division and talk to him about being a committeeman? And the response I got was, gee, I didn't know that we were supposed to do anything about election boards. I don't even know who this person is. And I'm not criticizing that person. I'm saying that they were put in charge and they weren't given a book. They weren't given a training session. And that's our fault.
That's engagement, though.
Right. Well,
that's
what I'm
saying. You get somebody, a volunteer who wants to help out, get them immediately engaged so that they feel valued.
And that's what we need to recruit. We need to train, and we need to give people incentives to want to do this. Now, the election board workers are paid, so that's a pretty good incentive. And they just raised the rates, so I think that we're going to have more success in finding people there. But with regards to the committee people and ward leaders, one of the things that that Philadelphia does differently than most other counties is that the committee people elect the ward leaders, and then the ward leaders kind of handle it from there. And when I say that, if there are endorsements to be made, it's the ward leaders rather than the committee people that make the endorsements. Whereas in most counties, it's the committee people that make that's vested in. Same thing with the citywide Republican Party leadership. The ward leaders elect that. In most other counties, that's done by the committee people. And if you've ever been to one of those meetings, and I have, you have a group of Republicans from across the county who are very interested in what's going on, and I think that those sort of gatherings build upon themselves. And I think that's something that we really need to consider here in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, if there's a vacancy for ward leader, it's filled by appointment by the chair. Really shouldn't be. If there's a vacancy for ward leader, it should be filled by a new vote of the the committee people in that ward, just like that you would if there was a vacancy for treasurer of the ward or, you know, secretary of the ward. That's the way it's filled for everything but ward leader. I think that that would assist us in incenting people to want to serve in those positions to rebuild that structure or to at least make progress on it.
So one of the things, and we've only got about 5 minutes left, so I do want to just go around the table and talk and just get your thoughts real quick on this particular issue. There seems to be, and we've seen it, we've talked about it on the show before, Matt and Calvin, you may not be aware we've talked about it before, but there seems to be a general disconnect between the establishment part of the party and the grassroots part of the party. In other words, what we call the establishment part and the conservative wing of the party. We had a Josh Prince has been writing some great blogs on this issue, in fact, what he calls Russian roulette within the state GOP. We've had county commissioner or county chairs kicking committee people off for supporting people in the primary, which the committee didn't endorse, which by the bylaws you're allowed to do. But I'm an advocate. I know James is an advocate, and so is Gary, that in the primary there should not be any endorsements, that the vote should be left up to the registered voters to pick their candidates. But yet that's over. We see it happening over and over again where it does happen. Matt, what's your feeling on this?
I could not disagree more with you guys.
Okay.
I think that there is no greater responsibility for somebody that holds themselves out as a party leader than to lead. Mm-hmm. And the decision is always left to the voters. I can guarantee you, in the last election, we didn't endorse people on a statewide basis for governor, Senate, or lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm.
Let me guarantee you that the 27th ward, which I am the elected ward leader of, endorsed for governor, Senate, and lieutenant governor. Why would I not do that? Billy Meehan used to say when they'd say to him, why don't you have an open primary? So, well, that just means that I don't have anything to say about it.
So my rebuttal, Matt, would be that by doing that, you put your thumb on the scale.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we put our thumb on the scale because we believe that by trying to persuade the party voters for a stronger candidate, that we get that we produce a better product,
mm-hmm.
and we have a stronger candidate to compete against the Democrats in the fall.
Now, and that's how Paula Patrick lost out based upon that, Matt, because Paula Patrick is one hell of a candidate, well-qualified. She could have won the entire state, no doubt about it, when she first ran. There's no doubt about it. But I'm saying by the party, the GOP, who have their select group of individuals that they already want to endorse because they feel that this person has a lot more money than that other person. And with that notoriety of financial investments, that they can help win that seat. And it doesn't always work out that way because we saw that happen just not too long ago, didn't we?
So we are going to run out. I want to bring you guys back on a future show so we can continue this discussion.
Question, Matt.
I want to have a discussion. So, Cal, you're
I'm exercising free speech. Yeah. Yeah, right. And not everybody's happy about it, I see.
Cal, what do you think? I mean, honestly, I mean, are you in favor of the endorsement process in the primary, against it?
I'm in favor of the endorsement process. I believe it brings value. Mm-hmm. The ultimate goal of the endorsement process is to win, right? And if I got five people running in the primary election, I'm spending resources, both human resources and financial resources, and assumingly, each candidate is going to probably the same contributors. So I'm wasting resources. So if I can endorse a strong candidate and we win, I think that value is important.
And so we're out of time. But my pushback on that is going to be that what you're saying is you're replacing a select amount of people's judgment with the overall people's
judgment. It's called sample ballots.
Absolutely
not.
They
don't push a sample ballot.
Nope. The voters get to decide.
Right. Not with a sample ballot when the party has said no endorsements.
So, and again, we're out of time. We're going to have this. We're going to come back. We're going to do another show on this. So thanks for listening to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM.